This is the Live Your Edge podcast, episode 11. This is Gilbert. Welcome to the podcast. Today, my guest is Daniel Lowe. Daniel started off in the corporate world in the UK and has since moved to Hong Kong, started a few companies, but ultimately succeeded in his current company, which is one of the fastest mobile app agencies in Hong Kong. Today we're going to learn some of his tips on resilience and how he was able to navigate his startup journey. This is Gilbert. Welcome to the podcast. Let's get started with a guest interview with Daniel Lowe. Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the show. And I have here with me today Daniel Lowe, who is the co-founder and CEO of GoGoChart. Daniel has been in the corporate world turned entrepreneur, and he's been running his own companies for the last 4 or 5 years. And now GoGoChart is one of Hong Kong's most promising digital agencies and technology companies. So Daniel is going to share with you a bit about his stories and some of the learnings that he has over the last few years. And if you are an entrepreneur or you are thinking about being an entrepreneur, you can definitely learn from Daniel, because he's a great example. So first of all, let's say hi to Daniel.
Hey, guys.
So Daniel, you were in the corporate world for a while, right? You graduated, you were in the UK at the time, and you spent a few years working. So how did you go from transitioning from, maybe you can tell us a bit about, you know, your corporate job and then how you transitioned from that to working in the startup and moving to Hong Kong?
Sure. So I used to work for Barclays Bank and a telecom company under the British Telecom umbrella. So it was fairly corporate. And having spent a number of years, 16 years in the UK, working my way up in the corporate ladder, moving back to Hong Kong 6 years ago, working for another corporate job, and then coming out to start my own business, that was a big transition. And I was actually given the exact same topic last week to a group of MBA students from Australia. Yeah, it was exactly the same topic about the transition from corporate to startup. Yeah, it's tough, you know, moving from corporate where everything is structured. You have all these big brand names behind you, whether it be in banking, financial services, or commodities, which is what I did in the macro in trading aluminium. And then getting your hands dirty, you know, being in startup where you have to do everything by yourself. You couldn't really leverage other people's time because you're on your own, really. When I first founded, before GoGoChart even, I actually failed so many businesses. I tried starting, you know, retail mobile accessory shop, networking event business, and a mobile development house, and even building my own product. And they all failed. It was really tough, but I think the biggest challenge, I would say, is to actually face yourself. You got to learn about your weakness, and it's okay to accept your weakness, you know, because I thought I could do everything. And most people think that, I think. Most people would think that they would probably have the ability to do, you know, everything. And it's right to be confident, actually, but when you're in startup, especially when it comes to scaling, you know, you have to let go. So I had to learn and face my own weakness and accept the fact that I wasn't good at everything. And in fact, I don't have to be good at anything. I just have to be good at a few things. So that was one of the biggest challenge to face myself, I think.
And so in terms of team, I'm sure you have teammates to complement your strengths and weaknesses. So what was one of the things that you felt that your team could do better than you, and you empowered them to do that?
Oh, everything, actually. So To give an example, a very good example, recently we've acquired, so we've been working with this Israeli company, which is one of the world's biggest online casino company. They're huge. And so we've been working with them for over a year. The account was managed. He's now really experienced, one of my colleagues. But when he first started, he was very green, very fresh, and he couldn't deliver his target, meaning he wasn't able to meet his targets and, you know, monthly revenue goals, etc. So come 6 months, 9 months, 12 months even, he was consistently missing targets. So most entrepreneurs or managers or bosses, you know, owners of the business would seriously consider this as a loss potential, right? You know, having hired somebody and haven't really produced any returns for you, especially when the roles are in sales roles, business development. Then one of the biggest KPI for salespeople is to give you an ROI in terms of sales figures. But the person didn't. But I kept him going because he was such a hardworking person. So I wanted to keep him on board. I just really liked the person, and I think that he will just get better and better. And guess what? Eventually, he basically closed and landed one of the biggest deals we've ever got. And actually, it's 50 times his annual figures. So I think you just have to speculate to accumulate. You just have to sometimes, you know, let go and probably a fate thing. I know it's very intangible when I say this, but you cannot calculate. I know there are things that you can calculate, especially when I'm in digital marketing. Everything is stats, right? But when it comes to people, you cannot do that. You just have to give them the autonomous, give them trust, give them support, and just let them be. So that's one of the lessons I've learned as well, is to learn to trust your people, your team.
What was one of the biggest, I'm sure in the working environment, especially startup environment, is very different from the UK and Hong Kong. So what is one of the cultural things that you had to pick up on and accept when you were working with teams in Hong Kong, or in Asia for that matter, that was different from working in the UK?
I think the culture actually differs massively, hugely, in terms of the culture. People here in Hong Kong and China actually are very different to the people in the UK in terms of work ethics. I actually think that people in Hong Kong work harder, but not necessarily working smarter though. So and I'm not saying the people in Hong Kong are working smarter. I'm just saying I think I'm trying to point out the difference when I manage the team in the UK and when I manage the team in Hong Kong. I feel like people less work-life balance. There are some team members in my team that are very much focused on work-life balance, but there are some that don't really care about work-life balance. They work, they basically overtime every night. You know, most of the times when I see them, even late at office, it's until midnight, sometimes gone past midnight. And that's bad, I think. But, you know, when they are trying to push for the milestone, when they're trying to complete the campaign and projects for the client, suppose they just have to work extra hours because of the natural requirement of the project. So hence we are having to grow, you know, aggressively as well. But yeah, again, I think the people in Hong Kong and China are very much, especially Asian, you know, when you're Chinese, when you're in Asia, people are more culture oriented in terms of connections, in terms of trust, in terms of people, the relationship, I think, treasuring the relationship between each another. Yeah, and I think, and I actually like this part more. I'm not saying the West don't. I'm not saying that, you know, when I was in the UK, they don't treasure relationship, you know, and they're all working really smart. No, and some work really hard too, I'm sure. But from what I've experienced, these are all just very personal experience and opinion. So I feel there's a huge culture clash, and people are actually very adaptive in China to new technologies, i.e. all these new payment methods, Alipay, WeChat Pay, you know, very different. People are using them for businesses, day-to-day transactions, whereas in the West, people are still using cash, credit cards, traditional methods. Yeah, I think things are moving very fast here in Hong Kong and China. extremely fast.
In terms of your team, you mentioned a lot about the building a relationship with them. So what are some of the things you would do to keep them motivated?
We do a lot. We have weekly social hours. So we have happy hours. We go out for drinks. So I try to give them the work-life balance. You know, we normally do it on a Wednesday or Thursday. So we have a sort of a mid-week or mid-weekend, you call it. We take them out for company holidays. You know, we have a trip planned, actually. We took them out to Phuket, all of them, to Phuket last year. And we're going for Manila this year, or actually January. So that's an exciting time. And we have regular bonuses. You know, these are important. I think offering them ESOP is actually a great thing. I'm very pleased to have offered them ESOP, employee stock option. What that means is that it's not just the paperwork, and it's not just the fact that you're giving them the shares, you know, the business. I think it's the sense of ownership as well. You're giving them something that they feel they have a piece in as well, and that they're involved in more than just, you know, the typical salary. They're in it also for themselves and for the team. Our team is we have a very strong team spirit. They're very much bonded. They even go out during the weekends and evenings, believe it or not. It's crazy, huh? The colleagues actually go out during weekends and evenings. I found out a couple of weeks ago. I'm like, wow, didn't even know that. They go on boat trip, actually. So that's pretty cool. I like that. And also, most importantly, I invest on them. I actually have been investing on a number of staff for their extracurriculum, i.e., one of my operation manager, I've been investing on her studying for accounting, professional accounting certificates and courses. So she just passed her level one accounting cert. She's already moved on to level two. So hopefully she'll move on to level three, which will definitely bring her up to professional efficiency. One of my other staff who focuses on business development, and she wants to develop career market. South Korean market, so she's gone to study Korean language, which I paid for, and yeah, she's doing really well. So I think if you treat your team, your staff, and your colleagues, if you treat the people right, I think they will treat you and your business right.
Mm. I hope that. The team, if you keep them happy and you spend time with them, you know, build a relationship, and then allow them to invest in the company, as the same way you're investing in them, go a long way to helping your company grow as a whole. And not only the company figures, but the people inside. And like you mentioned, there was a person on your team that wasn't hitting his numbers for an entire year, but you believed in him. And because of that, they closed a deal that was enormous.
Yeah, that's huge.
Let's take a turn and talk about GoGoChart as a company. Because some of the listeners, we briefly mentioned what you are working on. So why don't you share a bit about what GoGoChart does and what type of milestones you guys have been able to reach in the last, was it 2 years in operations?
Actually, our fourth year.
Fourth year. Wow. All right.
GoGoChart is a technology company specializing in digital marketing for apps. So we started off in 2014. Focusing in both iOS App Store and Google Play Store in exposure, increasing, promoting app to the top of the App Store in ranking, search result, etc. And then moving on to App Store Optimization, which is ASO, the similar version of SEO for websites. So we promoted the two heavily, actually, the ASO and also exposure, in the first 3 years. Until we moved on to become more analytical 18 months ago. So the company took a massive pivot 18 months ago, which is around about the time we raised our seed money, actually. And that's when we took a turn to become a real technology company where we use stats and figures to justify our performance. So we truly call ourselves performance-driven. Like the recent client case study, they gave us a massive testimonial saying that we are the best performance company, digital marketing company that they've come across. And they are the biggest online children casino company, bigger than Singer right now, actually. So we're very pleased with that. And this is probably why we're growing very fast as well. Yeah. And we have actually launched our own sophisticated ad deployment platform. What it does, it helps any developers, any publishers, or anybody who has an app or who's looking to build an app to acquire users effectively. So the platform is very simple, and we've been working under the table for that for about a year or so now. And we just recently launched our own product. Yep, so we're very excited for that.
And you guys have helped over 2,000 apps all over the world pretty much get to the top of an app store.
That's correct. Since 2014, we've helped a large number of apps, actually. Some really strong household names, some really big unicorn names as well. And yeah, we worked with a lot of apps. Some apps are actually owned by the same publisher or studio. I probably can't name the names, but yeah. So probably around about 600 clients. So, not all of them are e-paying users right now, because some of them are campaign-driven, meaning a couple of times a year, or only seasonal. But a good number of them are regular clients, so that's good.
Got it. So what is next for Gogo Chart? And moving forward, where you see it going in the next 3 years, 5 years?
We really want to be the best at what we do. You know, our team, myself, even our investor, believe in the company, brand, Gogo Chart. And we want to be taking Gogo Chart to a level where whenever people think of user acquisition, whenever people think of a great marketing company, Gogo Chart will come into their mind. So that's the sort of name that we've been trying to drive. When I first started Gogo Chart, in the first year, which is 2015, when we first entered any major awards, we got one at bronze, and people were actually, you know, I remember a group of people were laughing at us because we were such a small company. And, you know, we were up against some really big companies. Some of them were like over 1,000 staff. And this year we got 11 awards. Actually, we actually beat most of the people, including the people who
have 1,000 staff.
Yeah, we were the dark horse in 2018 this year for the AOTY. So that was pretty cool. You know, it showed some significant growth. It also boosted a lot of confidence in our clients, in our team. Myself as well, I'm very happy. In terms of where I want to take Gogo Chart in terms of probably a goal. So we've had some interesting talks with a number of institutions, and you know, potential deals are in talks. We're also looking to raise a Series A as well. So I think our own platform, our own digital platform, I think that's got huge potential, I think, because we have a very good relationship with Google and Apple, and helping them, working with them to acquire users for our clients. It's a triple win situation, actually. It's a win situation for our client because they need users. It's a win situation for Google and Apple because we're using their platform. We're leveraging their platform, giving them effectively business, and we make something out of it. So it's a triple win situation. One stone, three birds, actually. We're very happy with that. You know, maybe perhaps IPO one day as well. I think that's also in talk. But right now we are just very focused, the team, myself, partners. We're just working very hard to make sure we are able to sustain the demand, I guess, because we took on some really major clients and we want to be able to do a good job. And those clients will, you know, they're 6 months to 12 months. Hopefully this time next year when we talk again, Gilbert, I hope we will probably be at the same growth rate, which is 50%. That'd be very, very cool.
So you're doing 50% growth annually right now?
We've done more than 50%. But yeah, I'm very pleased with that.
And how big is your team now? You say you...
We have 10 in Hong Kong. We have 3 in China. We have 3 in Philippines. We have 1 in the US.
Oh, so the person, what is the person in the US doing? Are they...
Vanessa, she does blogs and all of our social media content, actually.
So you got a global team, but it's a single office or it's a multiple office?
It's a single office. We are actually having a new office, hopefully by early next year at the Philippines in Manila. We're trying to group them together. right now, we're just using co-working space.
Got it. But of course, your headquarters in Hong Kong, you have your own office.
Actually, our headquarters in Hong Kong is also a co-working space, but we are soon to move out because we're already renting 3 rooms. So we have a room, a meeting room, and another room. You know, the fees together already, you know, it's already enough to rent a nice big office in TST in the Kowloon side. So we're going to do that when we have a bit more time, I guess. Right now, we just want to focus and get all the campaigns and all the KPIs done. It's been a good quarter for us, especially this year.
Wow. What tips do you have for people aspiring to start a company that are listening to this right now?
I have two major tips, actually. First, you will have to be able to take failure. You know, if you're looking to start a business and making the assumption that you're going to succeed straight away, a year or two or 3 years, I can pretty much put a bet on because it's a pretty good bet. 99.9%, right? 97% is the failure rate, right, for most startups in the first year. And this is not me trying to demotivate you. This is me giving you the reality check. I failed so many times myself. I failed 4 or 5 times before hitting on Google chart, actually. So it's actually very fair to say most people will fail because you'll eventually give up after maybe 6 months. You're like, you know, startups not been, you know, some people might say that.
How many years of, so those previous companies before Google Chart, how many years did you spend on those collectively and before you started Google Chart?
2 years, actually.
2 years.
Yeah, 2 years. And I failed every single one of them. So I'm not new to failure, and failure is not new to me. I'm used to it. I've learned to embrace failures, actually, because, you know, I think the lesson here is to be able to learn from your failure so that you don't make the same mistake again. If you were to make the same mistake again, then you're not really learning. You're just being silly. So yeah, being able to take a hit, being able to take hard hit is essential. You know, very tough on that. Another bit of advice from me is cost. Actually, I have three, but the second one is cost. Managing your costs is huge. Because one of the biggest lessons I've faced, or the failure, is that I wasn't managing my costs properly or effectively. To give you an example, right now, a lot of businesses, I mean, actually, Gilbert, I'll ask you an opinion. This is just, you know, just an opinion. What would you say most startups will have their runway? How long is the cash flow runway?
Well, generally, I would presume it would be 9 months to a year.
Okay, so most businesses in Hong Kong have it for less than 6 months.
Most businesses
in Hong Kong have it for less than 6 months.
Even established ones, you're saying?
Yes, yes, yes. Microsoft, I think Bill Gates once said his burn rate was 9 months as well for a billion, you know, for a blue chip company. But that's obviously incomparable. But most businesses in Hong Kong are less than 6 months. Some are as little as 3 months. I have mine for 12 months. I'm very reserved because of what I've learned in the past. So some of my entrepreneurial friends, they're saying to me, "Oh, Daniel, you're so reserved. You're so, you know, you should be taking some risk. You should be, you know, going for it, right? Spend more money, go and hire more people." Pretty much like a typical investor mindset. But to be honest with you, I think, in my opinion, it's actually, we've seen so many businesses going out of business in the past 4 or 5 years. So many, so many. Some of my friends as well. It went from really high up to, you know, down here in less than 2-3 years. To me, it's not the roller coaster ride. To me, it's something that's sustainable. Because if you're going for something that quick and then go back down again, you're not really creating a responsible company or a responsible organization, because when it comes to a company, when it comes to an organization, you will have a team, and when you have a team, you have people, and you have your people to look after. So if you were just to burn out in 3 months, 6 months, then what about all those people you hired? Are they going to have to look for another job, or are they going to work for you for free, which I doubt highly for a long time? So yeah, it's, you know, costing is huge. Being able to manage your costs, being able to not spend too much money. Most of the startups actually fail on spending too much money. I'm not sure why all these investors keep forcing people to spend money and then grow, because there are ways you can grow and leverage without spending a lot of money super fast. say you raised $1 million, you don't have to spend all that million in the first 6 months. But that's my opinion. Again, you know, I can't represent all the startup and the whole of Hong Kong, obviously. But I've seen a lot in the past 4 or 5 years in Hong Kong, all the startup community. Most of them stumble on costing. Yep.
This brings a very interesting point, because there's always a debate between the investor, like you said, the investor mindset and the sort of like bootstrapping entrepreneur mindset, where there are some people that they have an idea and they're looking for an investor to invest money into their idea, and then they would use that money to hire people and then build the product and do etc. But then on the other hand, there are people that will actually work on their product, deliver MVP, and talk to customers and pretty much bootstrap the company from scratch and not try to take external money as a way to grow the company, and rather to grow it organically. So what you're saying here is be more on the bootstrapping side, right? And what do you see about what is your opinion on these two fields of thought? Because I see it a lot in the Asia. A lot of people want to, especially because in Hong Kong, it's a financial hub, right? Many people, some of them were there from investment banking, and then they start a company and they're looking for investors to grow the company. What approach do you feel that is? Would you feel that approach is not suitable for entrepreneurs in Hong Kong?
If your business were to rely heavily on fundraising, especially in Hong Kong, you know, if you were to think of a concept, come up with a concept, a business plan, and go and fundraise, and then assume you will have, you know, investors coming in with money, and then you can go and do your things. That isn't really bootstrap, right? That is just thinking of an idea and then go and talk to somebody and then ask for money. I mean, investors are not stupid. I've raised money myself. I have spoken with a good number of investors and potential investors. They're not stupid. I have also heard stories of a friend of mine, actually, who just came up with a concept and, you know, and some guy gave her some money and she raised. So it does happen, but I can assure you that the opportunities and the chances are very small when you just come up with a concept and people will come and raise and put money on you. It's very small. However, when you have a bootstrapped and lean, working, potentially breaking even business where you can survive, you know, the money that you make will basically allow you to survive, you will eventually have investors coming to you and potentially offer you investment, and you can go and fundraise even, because you have much higher leverage. I feel that the investors in Hong Kong, especially in the past 3-4 years, aren't really Series A or even seed. They're very much Series C and Series D, like the followers. So they would follow on to bigger deals, and you know, people in Hong Kong, investors-wise, have money. They look for immediate returns. They look for steady returns. They look for annual returns. Whereas investors in the US, when they give you $500,000 to $1 million, they don't want 20% back every year. They want 20x, 50x, right? So that's the mindset. I think that's very much down to culture, because people in Hong Kong are very shrewd long-term investors when it comes to properties, right, stock market. But I have seen changes in the recent 24 months, 18 months or so. There's a lot of startups, even Alibaba Fund, that's a good one as well. They are investing heavily on seed, Series A. A couple of my friends got invested by Alibaba, actually. Dede Cook, Sandbox, there's a Quintico, I think, yeah. Money lending one. I think I see changes. I do see changes in the trends are happening in Hong Kong. There are a lot of funds and government-backed funds as well where people can go out and raise. But they still need to see traction. You can't just come up with a concept, a business plan. Bootstrapping is a great idea because it also allows you to learn and test the market yourself. So I think it's a good idea to bootstrap.
And also might hindrance to have to take on investor money and then have to deliver on a schedule percentage returns. And if not, they will just like pull the plug on you. And I think that creates a very high pressure situation where if the company is not like really build a foundation, yet they are now being pulled behind the scenes and to forced to deliver, whereas sometimes a company needs more time to really decide what product they want to put out in the marketplace. And
yeah, you're right. You're 100%. You know, most of the investors, when they sign the agreement with, they would want some sort of collateral, right? They want some sort of, not guarantees, but almost like a KPI, if you call it. So we're very fortunate we don't have any KPIs. So, but these investors are very rare. You know, we have a very strong relationship with our investors and they obviously trust us. So that's good. Usually, most of the people, when I hear they invest, they get investment, they have lots of KPIs to sign. And it's tough. Like, they're forced to grow. They're forced to spend money. And they don't make profit. They are barely breaking even. When, you know, I'm running my own company, I'm not saying we're growing massively, but we're growing very healthily. And, you know, we don't have to report to anybody. So I'm quite pleased with that. I think until we have the necessity to go and find serious large investors where we have no choice but to give to accept the KPIs, but knowing that's good for our company in the future, then I'm sure we will consider that as well. So it's all choice, I think, matter of choice. You do that because you needed the money. You accepted a KPI for a reason. They didn't have a gun pointing at your head. Or one of my other friends who raised money through Alibaba, actually, he managed to negotiate it away, the KPI, where they didn't have to sign such a heavy KPI. So I think it's negotiable.
And you bootstrapped it, Google Chart, from the beginning until you did take on a seed, which was about a year or two ago, right?
Yep.
So it was like 2 years of bootstrapping the company. And I believe you were already profitable from the first few months or day one?
We made money from the first month.
Wow.
We made money from the first month. We were profitable immediately, actually. The growth wasn't very steady. It was very good, you know, especially when the market were starting to accept technology companies like us, where back then, 4 or 5 years ago, there were very few companies doing what we do, which is mobile marketing. Even though we have also diversified into web and SEM and PPC, but our main core, especially when we first started, was very much mobile app driven. Yeah, we made money from day one. It was very tough. You know, we were door knocking everywhere for business. I was literally cold calling everyone, every publisher that I know I could think of online. I was messaging them. I remember my first client, I door knocked him, and he asked me if I had any references or case studies. I said, no, I didn't, but I very much would like to give it a try, and, you know, would you accept, I can give you a good discount? And he said, yes. The very first order was a few $1,000, and then he immediately repeated the order. You know, it was 10,000, then 50,000, 100,000, and then eventually 300,000.
Wow.
We made money up front, yes.
It's amazing. So we are actually coming to the conclusion of the podcast today. Do you have any final words for our audience?
I have one more thing to share, which was, you asked me if I had any tips to give to any people that are looking to startups earlier, and I mentioned two, right? I mentioned that you have to face, you know, be able to take on failures. You also have to be able to manage your costs. And I have one more to share, if I may. I think this is very important. This is so important. It's, if not more important, the first two, because it's about your team. It's about your people. So I mentioned I invest heavily on my team. Did you know 50% of my team were introduced and referred through my existing team?
No, didn't know that.
Yeah, one out of two were basically hired because they were referral. So I actually rank referrals heavily, way more than any, you know, recruiting companies. No disrespect to the recruitment business or headhunting business. I just, because I place such a trust, huge amount of trust in my existing team. So their people, when they refer their friends or family or whoever, I'm going to trust them as well. Or, you know, and it's been working well for us so far. So that's good. Treat your team right. Treat your people right. That's super important. So that's my final word.
Awesome stuff. I love the advice. And I'm sure our audience would really appreciate it as well, especially if they are on the fence of making their next move. So here is the conclusion of our podcast. If you'd like to learn more about Daniel, follow him, where can people find you, Daniel?
LinkedIn me, Daniel Lo, Google Chat, or you can add me on Google Chat and Skype. But LinkedIn would be a great one because you can see my profile, can see your profile.
Okay, so it's Daniel and Lo, L-O. Google Chart is G-O-G-O-C-H-A-R-T.
Yeah. Correct. Thank you.
Great stuff. So thanks a lot for coming on the podcast today, Daniel.
Welcome. Thanks for having me.
And thank you all for tuning in.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. You can find more episodes every Tuesday. If you haven't done so, please subscribe for more updates as they come. Until next time.